Good evening. Welcome to this Aleary Report. Today is Thursday, September 1st, 2011. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, a very special guest, Dr. Samuel Milam. He's the author of Dirty Electricity, subtitle Electrification and the Diseases of Civilization. Dr. Milam is a physician and epidemiologist, a very special person. It's a very special book. It's one you want to get. It's a great read. It's easy to read, and it will inform you tremendously about a very important topic. First, money and markets, and ask Catherine. I'm going to do a quick let's go to the movies, but as a comment in money and markets on Die Hard with a Vengeance, action movie with Bruce Willis and Samuel Jackson. But first, some very important housekeeping announcements. The private blog is ready. We have it up and running, but we're going to send the all the information about how you can access it next week, right after Labor Day. It's coming out, and once you, you'll be able to log in from any place at the website and as well from the control panel, and you will start to be able to see the archives for the Aleary Reports, the newer ones. On the blog, you'll be able to post both questions and comments. So if we want to get some discussion going or if you want to give feedback, it's all going to be there. We'll also have the capacity to put private blog posts that only subscribers get. So you'll be getting an update with a link to instructions on the blog. And, of course, if you have any questions, please feel free to call customer service. But we hope that this is going to make a tremendous difference in the speed and ease with which you can access the information, because it will all be on the blog. It will be searchable. And we'll have outlines and notes from every Aleary report. So we're really excited about this. It's been in the works for about a year, and I think it's going to make a huge difference. Our theme tonight is financial ecosystems. Financial ecosystem is a word you'll hear me use a lot, and it's because I really think of the financial system and the flow of money and information about money and the incentives that it creates to really operate in the way a ecosystem does. But it's, for most of us, it tends to be invisible, because money's sort of, you know, not visible like trees and grass and flows and other things we think of as being in the ecosystem. And one of my goals, of course, with this Aleary report is to help you see the ecosystems in two ways. One is as in our individual lives. To me, you know, money runs through every part of your life, and that means it runs throughout the balance sheet and income statement. And I'm always amazed when I have somebody come to me and say, dirty electricity, why are you talking about dirty electricity? That has nothing to do with finance. Well, it has everything to do with finance, because one of the biggest expenses we have, if you look at your income statement, is utilities. We pay over a lifetime a great deal of money for utilities. And a lot of times, as with any product, we're not getting what we bargained for. So instead of getting electricity, as you listen to Dr. Milam, instead we're getting an impact on our health. It doesn't have to be, particularly if we make provision that the electricity not be dirty. And believe you me, that impact on our health can have a lot to do with impact on our finances. So in fact, this is a financial issue if you work through how the money flows both through your balance sheet and income statement. And of course, debasement, which is one of the things I'm most concerned with, is the risk of debasement. Debasement occurs not just in, for example, the value, the purchasing power of your dollar deposits dropping. It comes in the form of products and services that we're used to having a certain quality being debased in terms of quality without our even knowing it. So literally, we have people who think they're saving money by eating a different kind of food, when in fact it's not really food. It's been debased in very invisible ways. And then financial ecosystems also relates to the connection between different stories. So as I'm going to talk about money and markets, I want to help you connect the dots between different stories that are going on in the financial system but are very much connected. Money and markets, big story this week is the impact of Hurricane Irene in the United States. Lots of flooding and power outages, all sorts of unusual behavior happening at the very time we have extraordinary volatility in the precious metals and equity markets, and it kind of makes you wonder, because we saw a mandatory evacuation in New York City in Lower Manhattan, and of course that always makes me nervous. I wrote a blog post, it's up on the blog, maybe off the front page by now. It's called So What Happens to the Gold and Critical Records Stored on Wall Street During Hurricane Irene? And in it, I bring up the movie made in the 90s, Die Hard with a Vengeance. It's the third in the Die Hard action series with Bruce Willis. It tells the story. Jeremy Irons is a terrorist who's trying to steal the gold from the vaults at the Federal Reserve, the New York Federal Reserve, busting through a subway tunnel in Lower Manhattan. Now, Lower Manhattan, in fact, is, the subways are quite extensive under Lower Manhattan. And the reason I wrote the blog post and wanted to sort of remind you about the Die Hard story is when you have a mandatory evacuation of a place in the world that has such extraordinary critical records and such extraordinary assets, it does sort of make you wonder, because it's a time when a lot of things can go wrong. So given what was going on in the market, I asked the question, what is happening here? Of course, we don't know the answer, but it is not a good sign. In the mortgage world, what we're watching is part of the pressure that you're seeing in the volatility in the precious metals and the stock markets is kind of burping out in different ways throughout the mortgage world. One of the top stories in the financial markets today, the Fed announced an enforcement action against Goldman Sachs for servicing by its subsidiary, its former subsidiary, it sold it last year, Lytton Mortgage. And we can ask the question, 2 weeks ago, Lloyd Blankfein hired a criminal defense attorney, and so the question is, is his hiring of that attorney in part one of these issues? And so sort of a very big question, why is the Fed doing that now? I don't think we know the answer, but I think it is important. We had earlier this week, Nevada expanded its lawsuit against Bank of America for its mortgaging, and I put, in fact, the complaint up on the web because it's a very interesting document coming from the Attorney General's office in Nevada, because it goes through the whole origination and all through the servicing and foreclosure process, and literally it's almost a primer on a whole variety of fraudulent mortgages practices. It's quite extensive and quite serious, and it's worth taking a look at. And the question, when it came out, is this going to mess up the settlement of the Attorney General's with, they're trying to negotiate an industry-wide and 50-statewide settlement. So Nevada hits with another broadside. Now, at the same time, we have the administration saying that they're thinking of taking all the mortgages at Fannie Freddie, the defaulted mortgages at Fannie Freddie and FHA, and transferring them to large institutional investors. Well, the politics and the response to this has been extraordinary, and I put up a blog post called It's Time to Bring Our Mortgages Home. Your Municipality and Community Venture Fund is the ideal investor for Fannie, Freddie, and FHA defaulted mortgages. So what's this story about? What the federal government has done is assumed responsibility for an enormous amount of mortgages in a manner that really protected the private sector from the losses. So basically the taxpayer has eaten the vast majority of the losses and assumed responsibility for trillions of dollars of mortgages, and now the administration is saying, okay, we're gonna transfer them back at pennies on the dollar, and it runs the risk of being an extraordinary transfer of wealth back once again to the banks. Now, it's happening at the same time that we hear a constant drumbeat that the private sector is going to push hard to be able to repatriate profits without having to pay taxes. And this is going to be a very important issue in Congress in the fall. Now, connect the dots. If large investors are allowed to repatriate enormous amounts of profits at the same time that literally the government transfers an enormous amount of residential mortgages to them at pennies on the dollar after they've protected them on the write-down by assuming them at par or near par, we're basically watching the pump and dump of the housing stock again. So this is a very, very important important theme going on, and I suspect it's part of a lot of the squabbling that you're seeing on the enforcement side of the mortgage industry, because there's literally an enormous amount of real estate in play, and there's no doubt about it that the private sector is angling to benefit from this. Now, there's a deeper thing we're also watching at the same time, and it comes up with this push to repatriate basically profits without taxes, and that is that you have a tremendous amount of money looking for a place to go that's safe. And it's both institutional and retail investors alike. Part of it comes from the fact that, you know, QE1, QE2, we're printing money, more and more money, but at the same time, we're also watching the reengineering of the governance system through the debt, as we've talked about in the last couple Solari reports. We have literally Robert Lighten, who used to be a colleague of mine in Washington, worked at OMB during the Clinton administration, said, quote, "If the helicopter comes raining money on your banks, it's only temporarily there. It can be disruptive." Bob was responding to the fact that regulators have been pushing the banks to take in a huge amount of cash that's been coming out of Europe as the European banks are having more and more trouble. Let me just read you the quote. "Cash held by domestically chartered U.S. banks, which includes Federal Reserve balances, rose to a record $1 trillion earlier this month, up 27% from the end of July last year. Deposits held by the 25 largest lenders expanded to $4.69 trillion in the week, ended August 10th, up 8.5% from the end of May. The Fed balances advanced to $1.6 trillion as of August 24th from $1.05 trillion a year earlier." So, you know, sort of typical of the Orwellian financial system, as the federal government is downgraded, of course, it's attracting more money into the short run. When at the beginning of the year, my last prediction was that this year we would have a 65% chance of a slow burn through the end of the year, 25-30% chance of a 2008 scenario happening, and then 5% chance, as you know, I give the collapse scenario very little chance of happening. I'm going to raise the chance of a 2008 collapse up to another 5%, so 30-35%, and slow burn 60%, and that's because what we're watching, whether it's the tension in the mortgage markets, whether it's the debate about repatriation, or the volatility in the precious metals market and the stock market, I think the chances of a big drop, particularly in the equity markets this year, are increasing, so I'm going to change it. I think the biggest risk is not that we get a real sort of spiral down. I think the biggest risk to keep the slow burn war going, we're just going to see increased chances of war and violence, and that's our biggest risk. But make no mistake about it, the problem in the financial system is not an economic problem. The problem is we literally have a significant portion now of the leadership who is above the law. And when you have a group of people who do not have to obey the law and can use violence to enforce their wishes without being in conformity with the law, then less and less looks safe, and you get this situation where lots of money is simply looking for a safe place to go, and it's harder and harder to find it. I've had several debates in the last week with people who were proposing constitutional amendments for issues that sound on the face of them to be great, but the point I try and make again and again and again is, what is the point of trying to pass more laws when the problem is we have a group of people who don't have to obey the law? Passing more laws just gives us more laws to conform, more laws they can use to enforce against us. It doesn't answer the fundamental question of how are we going to get them to obey the law. You know, the laws we have are, the existing laws are good, and are that they're not being obeyed. So that's it for money and markets. Our hero tonight, not surprisingly, because you know this is my way of doing it, is Dr. Samuel Milam. Dr. Milam is someone who spent a lifetime trying to get to the bottom of of what is making us not healthy and what we can do about it. If you read his book, Dirty Electricity, what you'll find out is this comes from a lifetime of work, and it's just another sterling example of the fact that there are a tremendous number of people out there who are doing great stuff, who really are heroes. You just tend not to hear them through the corporate media because the information they're bringing to light is not necessarily what is good for corporate profits. And we'll be talking with him after Ask Catherine. Very quickly, the feedback on the Adam Trombley interview was absolutely incredible. We've posted it up on the blog post about the interview I did with Adam. We will have a transcript up next week, so if you're interested, keep an eye out for that. Adam has now agreed to return in November to discuss energy technology. We got lots more questions for Adam, and I'm going to make sure we'll set aside time in November to discuss them when he returns. I had several questions from people asking me about, did they think there was going to be a time this year when we should exit from precious metals? No, I bring up that topic because I think it's important to think about now, but I don't expect that to be something that will happen this year. Finally, I'm working on my list of the top books for navigating the next decade. I want to repeat again, one book is The Evolution of Cooperation by Robert Axelrod. It's a marvelous book to help point the way to real solutions. And it's one of the reasons I think that transparency is so absolutely critical. We have a new special Solari report coming out in September. It's called William Diefendorfer, The Financial Hitman of Student Loans. And it's going to get into the issue of sort of transparency and why transparency is so important to real solutions. And back to the enforcement question I was talking about, how do we enforce against people who are not obeying the law? Well, transparency is step one to a wider social enforcement, which can really work. So if you're interested in the top books, that's certainly going to be on the list, and I recommend it to you. Dr. Millam's book, Dirty Electricity, is absolutely going to be on the list, so I'm going to recommend that to you as well. So without further ado, let me introduce to you Dr. Samuel Millam. He hails from the West Coast of the United States. He is a physician, an epidemiologist to get his work out and really help people understand what is happening and what they can do about it, wrote Dirty Electricity. It's a wonderful book. I recommend it to you. He also has a website. You can link to it from the blog. So without further ado, Dr. Millam, are you with us?
Am I there?
There you are. Hello.
I was listening to you entranced, and I forgot to push the star 6.
Well, so, yeah, it's always a trick to remember how to get back in. Well, let's just dive right in because I want you to explain, because I'm still not clear, and I've read your book 3 times. What is dirty electricity?
Well, that's a phrase coined by the utilities to describe basically non-60 hertz electricity that's flowing on the wires. The generating in this country is basically 60 cycles a second, or 60 hertz. In Europe, it's at 50 cycles a second. And for a lot of our history, that's basically called clean electricity. Now, what's happened is, especially in the last 25 years, we've plugged a lot of devices in, like computers and other things, that chop up the current and add high-frequency transients to the return current. These are, you know, way above the 60 cycle. They're in the thousands of cycles or in the millions of cycles a second. And the wires don't like that. And so, unfortunately, what the utilities... let me back up a second. When the grid was built... Electric circuit is electricity coming from a generating station to a substation to your house or to your business, and then it all has to go back to the substation. And ordinarily it went back through the wires, except in extraordinary cases, there were, in rural areas, they had these single-wire earth return systems where all the electricity went out on one wire and all came back to the ground. Well, that was not allowed until like 20 years ago. If you look at the public utility regs, they specify clearly that you're not supposed to use the earth as a routine or normal return to the substation. But the last 20 years, instead of beefing up their wires, the return wires, they've been allowed to dump this dirty electricity into the earth, and it gets into our houses through ground wires, through plumbing, metal plumbing, and through wires. So dirty electricity is electricity that shouldn't be there. Think of it in a water analogy. It's like clean water compared to sewage. And we wouldn't accept it if clean water was delivered to our house, and then we were allowed to, the utility was allowed to dump the dirty water from our toilet and elsewhere back onto the ground to take it back to their plants.
But it's something that's invisible, so it's very difficult for someone like me, a layperson, to know.
It's invisible, but you can hear it if you have a little AM portable radio, and you tune it off station and walk around your house or your apartment or where you work, and any place that howls or gives you loud static, it's picking up radio frequency. That's what it is. It's a radio. And when you get arcing and sparking or generation of dirty electricity, it makes this audible noise on the radio. So you can't have a cheap detector for $15 from Radio Shack to pick this up. And, of course, they're more complicated and expensive and better equipment, but that's not for the layperson.
Right. Now, for years, I've been traveling with a Stetzer meter. And does a Stetzer meter measure dirty electricity?
Yeah, it measures the rate of change of voltage against time, dVdt in calculus, if you remember. And it does measure dirty electricity in a certain part of the band, the frequency band, like between 2 and 100 kilohertz. Now, there's a lot of stuff above that, all the microwave and Wi-Fi and cell phone transmissions. The Stetzer meter won't pick that up, but they will pick up the stuff that really seems to be hurting us, killing us. That's the dirty electricity.
Okay, now how did you didn't come out of college saying, I'm going to become the world's leading expert in dirty electricity. How did you get onto this?
Well, I didn't get onto it. Marty Graham, a professor at UC Berkeley Emeritus, and Dave Stetzer, an electrician in Wisconsin, they got into it looking after sick cows. Basically, I'd done a lot of the pioneering work in the health effects of electricity just using the records. I showed that electricians have increased mortality from brain cancer, leukemia, and other diseases, and I published that stuff like 30 years ago, but I didn't believe that it was the power frequency, the 50-60 cycle magnetic fields that were the problem, because the data just didn't look right. And when I came across this dirty electricity business that Graham and Stetzer were talking about, I said, my God, that's what it is. And the way I got sold on it was I was doing a study of cancer in a school out in the West Coast here, and I was sticking my nose in where I shouldn't have, but I'm glad I did, because it proved conclusively that this dirty electricity is a potent, uniform human carcinogen. And in retrospect, it causes a lot of other stuff, too. But and that school study showed that the teachers who worked in the rooms that the Stetzer meter showed had very high levels were the ones who got the cancer, preferentially.
What I would love is for you to take the time and go through the whole school story. It's described in the book, but I think it's a great example of not only the correlation between the dirty electricity and the cancer, but also the resistance to kind of understanding and dealing with this in any institutional context.
Yeah, I would be very happy to. Let me just back up. I didn't come on to this electric field stuff in the last few years. I really started this in my very first job. There was a paper. I was New York State Health Department. I'm an East Coaster, born and bred in Albany, New York, and I moved away to Honolulu, to University of Hawaii in the early 60s, and I wound up on the West Coast in 1968 to take my last job at Washington State. But when I was in my first job in the New York State Health Department, I read a paper by Richard Dahl and a co-author, and it described the emergence of an age peak in childhood leukemia using U.S. data from the 30s. They showed that before 1930, if you looked at the age distribution of kids dying of leukemia, it was flat. I mean, at age 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 was just about the same. But then they showed it in 1930, and then thereafter, a peak started emerging at age, say, 2 through 4. And it was the major type of leukemia, common acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Boy, when I read that paper as an epidemiologist, I said, oh, my God, this is it. If we can just figure out it had to be something environmental because it happened de novo, out of the blue skies. And what happened in the 30s and 40s to drive this? And researching that study, I looked around the world, and places that didn't have electricity didn't have this kind of leukemia. So I wrote down in my mind that, hey, look for electricity in the future. And the next thing that happened is, when I was in New York, I there was an article in The Lancet, it's a famous British medical journal, and asking about knowledge of childhood leukemia clusters. So, you know, I had access to the great death record set in New York State. So I just, you know, we didn't have computers then. I just took them to a card count sorter, sorted them out, and found out, yeah, we had a hell of an epidemic that nobody had noticed in Rome, New York. So I rented a car. I got a state car, went out, and I visited all the cases and made sure that that's what they had, looked at their slides and talked to their doctors and talked to the parents. I never could put two and two together. I wrote it up. But about 25 years later, a Polish investigator named Smigelski wrote that he studied Polish military people and showed they had leukemia, especially people who worked with radar and microwaves. And all of a sudden, I remembered when I was back in Rome, New York, doing that study of the childhood leukemia, the whole time I was watching these big radar arrays rotating at Griffiths Air Force Base, which is not there anymore. So I said, aha, that may be what caused that cluster. So then the final thing was I kept thinking about how can I look at this? And then I ran across, just sitting at the web one night surfing, and I saw this graph pop up that showed the time trend of residential electrification in the U.S. Being a dummy, I didn't know where it came from, so I emailed the people, and they were good enough to write back and say, well, it's the Census Bureau data, son. So I dug out the census data, and there it was. It showed for 1930 they had the farms, and 40 and 50 they listed, they asked the question at the census of whether or not you had electric lighting in your house, you know, tied to the grid. And so there I had the electrification data. What was really unusual about it is most of the big cities were electrified by the turn of the century. Electrification started on Pearl Street in New York City with Edison and his 9 jumbo generators pushing electricity into the wires in New York. By the turn of the century, almost all the big cities in the world had it. But this graph I saw of the time trend showed the remarkable fact that the last farms in this country didn't get their electricity until 1956. And the big push came with the rural electrification and the New Deal with, Franklin Roosevelt. They enacted, they passed a law which made it able for the rural people to get electricity with government help. So when I saw that, I said, hey, there's two big populations in this country, one of which has electricity historically now, and one that has it and one that didn't have it. So that's what I did. Did the childhood leukemia study with Eric Osiander, who worked with me, and we showed clearly that this peak of childhood leukemia at age 2 through 4 didn't occur until electrification came to your place, and it spread right across the country in sync with electrification. So when I was doing that study, just, you know, being nosy and curious, that I had stacks of death books on my dining room table, you know, these vital statistics volumes, and I noticed that other cancers, not just the childhood cancer, seem to have the same relationship with electrification. I said, oh, that's curious. So I went ahead and we finally did a formal study of it and wrote another paper on that. But the interesting thing, when we got the childhood leukemia study done, and I was really proud of it and worked hard and made it nice, and I couldn't get it published in this country. You know, look at, I've got 100 publications. I review for journals. I still do. And I just couldn't, anyway, send it to American Journal of Epidemiology. I sent it to Lancet. I sent it to British Medical Journal, to Journal of National Cancer Institute, JAMA, you know, one after another. And finally, I sent it to a friend of mine who's a former editor of American Journal of Epidemiology. And I said, what's wrong with the study? And she said, nothing. It's just, it's politically challenging. So I put it in a British journal called Medical Hypotheses, and I sent my next paper there. So with this behind me, I knew that, I just knew in my guts that electrification was responsible for all this misery and this mortality and this death, but I just couldn't believe that it was the power frequency magnetic fields, because I just want to get technical, but the risk ratios just weren't that big. In other words, you might have a double of cancer rates. When you smoke, you get a 22-fold excess of lung cancer. So that takes me to retirement, and I've got a condo in California, and a newspaper came across one Sunday. My son happened to be there. I don't read the paper much. He said, hey, Dad, there's a cancer cluster at a local school, La Quinta Middle School, which is about 3 miles from the condo. And when I was just reading the article, I was absolutely sure that there was a cancer cluster, and the teachers who were complaining about it were right. The article was about an expert brought in from the local cancer registry by the school district to basically put out the fire. But they listed names and types of cancer. So I called the newspaper and told them, hey, look, if the teachers want help, here's my number. Next day they called me, and we got into it. But it was most interesting and disappointing there. I figured, hey, here, I'm offering my services for free to do an important study. I figured that I'd be embraced by the school district. They said, no way. It took me months to get across the doorstep. I never physically put my foot there. But they just put me off, and finally I got a flat-out refusal to do anything. So I did the study with the help of the teachers under threat of criminal trespass, because one of the teachers invited us into the school one night and to make some measurements. And so when I reported that we found this extraordinary levels of dirty electricity with the Stetzer meter, they just said, they just told me, keep out or we're going to get you arrested under the Homeland Security Act.
What year was the year that you did the...
That was 2004. As we moved down there in that first February, there was an article in the paper that led to a study which finally got published in, I think, 2008. But we had to do it without any help from the school. The teachers did all the... We looked right through the yearbooks to get all of the people who taught there. And one thing that really made the study very, very good is one of the teachers had saved the classroom assignment rosters. In other words, every fall when they turn up for school, they say, you know, Jane Doe goes to room two. She had that for all the years that the school was open. It was, you know, built in 1990, I think it was. So we had everybody from the day it was built. And the other thing that happened is, since I couldn't go into the school, I got the teachers to make a universal appeal to Cal OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Agency in California, about their problem, and that forced the California Health Department to get involved. And Dr. Raymond Neutra came down to the school and actually measured the dirty electricity in every room of the school, and we got that data. So with that data and the mortality data, we could put together the study, and it was just remarkable. They had risk ratios, you know, 10 times expected levels of certain kinds of cancers like melanoma. And once I had that data in hand, I knew exactly what was going on and with this dirty electricity. And the big surprise when I went back and looked at the national data was it wasn't just the cancer. It was everything. It was heart disease. I couldn't believe that. And it was suicide of all things. And diabetes has a really strong relationship to this. So then I went back and read Edison. He wrote extensively, and he complained bitterly about his generators wearing out. Part of the generators that wore out is a commutator. That's where the electricity comes off the moving parts through brushes. And as brushes, electric brushes, looked like brushes in the old days. Now they're just carbon blocks. There were stiff wires bound at the top. They looked like a broom or brush. And they were wearing out as commutators. Anytime you get that scenario, you get arcing and sparking. I've got an old vacuum cleaner here that I love to fire up in the garage in the dark, and you see this blue-green light coming off the brushes that are arcing. And I can plug my Stetzer meter in and show when that thing's on. It's putting a lot of dirty electricity into the wires. So I think Edison unknowingly was putting dirty electricity into the wires in New York City from 1882 on. In fact, by 1900, there was an appreciable shortening of life in people who lived in New York City. It was 8 years less than other places. I've been talking too much. Any other questions?
No, I wanted to, there's a story. I've been dying to tell you the story and ask a question. Because I travel around with my Stetzer meter, and I try not to stay in places that are above 50 on the meter. And if they are, I've got all the filters, and I push the filters in the outlets and try and get it down. Well, I was just out in California for 3 months, and I leased an apartment. But before I leased it, I took my Stetzer meter in there and checked, and it was all, everything was below 50 throughout the apartment. So I leased it. And then, lo and behold, what started to happen, I moved in, and at night, and I won't bore you with the details of how I went about measuring this for the first month, every evening from 9 to 5, 9 at night to 5 in the morning, it would the readings would change from below 50 to anywhere from 800 to 1,500.
Wow.
And it happened every night from 9 to 5.
Wow.
When everybody was asleep and the electricity was pretty much turned off.
Yeah. Well, you see the electricity in your house. You make some of the dirty electricity, but a whole lot of it come in from outside. If there's a big factory or plant on the same grid loop that was running a night shift, say they had big motors or machines that generated the stuff, a lot of stuff generates it. Variable speed fans, variable speed motors do it. Any place that has heavy electric usage or just somebody putting on a bunch of compact fluorescent lights will do it. But you were getting it from outside, because I've gone into houses.
This is a residential community. Now they had a lot of, there are a lot of, it's Silicon Valley, so there's a lot of IT companies, but. Anyway, I the one thing I didn't do was call up PG&E and say what in the world's going on, but I just ended up putting in a special order for Stetzer filters, and I had the whole apartment Stetzerized. It was very expensive, but one of the things it taught me was, don't assume because it's at 50 at any, 50 or below at any particular time that speaks for the whole 24-hour cycle.
Oh, no, it changes. It could change appreciably. And one of the real disappointing things is that, everywhere I go, I take my meter, and I had to go in for an MRI at the Kersey Cancer Center near Palm Springs, and I plugged my meter in, and it read 20,000. I got a special meter.
Oh, my God.
20,000. Every outlet was that like that. The emergency room at the major medical center in Palm Springs, same way. I went to a cancer center down on the same campus with a cousin who was dying of cancer, and they were over 20,000 too. The medical community doesn't want to hear about it. I told the facilities people, I told the people who ran the emergency room, they just look at you with a blank stare, and they think you're wacko.
Is it possible for utility or an institution or a household to redesign, whether on the wholesale level or the institutional or house level, is it possible to rewire or change the electricity so this doesn't happen?
Absolutely. The first thing that has to happen is Well, the Electric Power Research Institute, the think tank bought and sold by the electric utilities, they recognized this a long time ago. Dirty electricity costs a lot of money. It burns out motors. People who have specialty deals where they have to have precision pumps, they can't use it. First thing they have to do is rewire or filter it out. The main thing that has to happen is we've got to get the utilities to, as EPRI said, put a fifth wire up to carry all the dirt that's going into the ground back to the utility on the wires. That would solve half the dirty electricity problem right then and there. The other thing we've got to get is this insanity of insisting that they have to have compact fluorescent bulbs. They're legislating them out. I mean, those things, they put out a ton of it. When I moved to, when I first learned about this, I had a track light with compact fluorescent lights in my house. Once I got those out, it was easy. I took six filters to get the house, you know, back down to under 50. And you need extra filters near the computer because they generate, they all have switching power supplies. They could mandate that all the devices that generate dirty electricity have tuned filters to get rid of it. They know how to do it. This isn't rocket science. But, you know, it's money.
It's two things. It's expense, but also it's an admission that you haven't done it in the past, and that could be a liability issue.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem with the schools. Their lawyers obviously wrote these nasty letters to me, and they're just afraid if they admit that they do have a cancer problem caused by electricity, that they'd be liable to suit. And I can't get any. I've got a bunch of great cases for some gutsy lawyer. We could just win it hands down. But I just can't find a single person in the last 15 years who's willing to take on these utilities. They got deep pockets, and the cell companies are the same way. Now, as long as I mentioned cell phones. The towers are a problem, not so much the stuff coming off the top that runs your phone, but they all have switching power supplies in the base. Another school I got called to was, the teachers of this other elementary school read the La Quinta study and said, hey, we got the same thing going on here. So I went over there and looked at it. Oh, my God, there's a cell phone tower 20 feet from one of the classroom wings. And they all have dirty. They make dirty electricity in spades because they have switching power supplies. Because they take the AC, all transmitters run on DC, so they have to change it to DC. And they also have a battery backup. The batteries have to be charged, so those chargers do it too. And unfortunately, this in the school, the dirty electricity levels were extremely high. In the classrooms that were closest to the tower, I got a graph in my book showing
electricity is coming. How is that dirty electricity coming in? It's not coming in through the.
It's coming through the
wireless. It turns the electricity on the wires dirty.
Exactly, and it dirties them up. There's a nice study out of Brazil. I just wrote a letter to the editor about it, and they show that they get an aggregation of cancer on the base of these towers all through this big city they looked at. And I told them to look at all the other causes of death, and they're going to find the same thing. You know, like suicide. I mean, who would have thought suicide is related to this? But there's a couple of good studies, occupational studies and a residential study showing high suicide rates with measured magnetic fields. And in my data, the suicide rate just goes up as soon as you residentially electrify like mad. And I think it's what's going on with those kids in Iraq and Afghanistan. The soldiers, they got high suicide rates. It's because they truck in all this expensive fuel oil to run fresh generators, which make dirty electricity, to keep them cool, to air condition because it's hot. And they've been electrocuting a few kids, and I think that's why they're getting that also. But as long as we're talking about dirty and clean electricity, there's a big push toward, you know, wind and solar. Well, I think it's great, but unfortunately, I've measured both, and they have these inverters to change what they generate to be in sync with the grid, 60 cycle over here, and those devices chop up the current too and put out a lot of dirty electricity. I've measured the wind farm near where I live down in California. The ground is filthy, and so's the air. Why don't you ask me some questions? I've been talking to you.
No. So here's the thing. Let's say I'm listening to you. I get the book. I read the book. I think, okay, this is something that is very important for me to protect myself and my family. What do I do? How do I check my electricity? And if it's dirty, then what are the actions I can take?
Well, you know, I in the end of the book, I go into this specifically. Well, the cheap detector is a model 12586 AM FM radio from Radio Shack. That'll show you where most of your dirty electricity is. And then the book also shows you that you don't want any DECT phones, DECT, digital enhanced cordless telephones, and because the base puts out RF the whole time. We've been talking about dirty electricity, but I'm worried about the whole house. And so that's another source. Compact fluorescent lights, no. Don't ever put a cell phone to your head. Don't ever carry it on your body while it's on. I've got a cordless phone I'm talking about right now, but it's a foot from my head, and it doesn't radiate. The other thing they can do is Stetzer Markets plug-in filter. You plug it into an outlet, and it gives you a reading, and you'd like to keep it below 50. You know, I gave a book signing at the Olympia Public Library 2 weeks ago, and as part of it, I made measurements, and my God, the place was over 20,000 in the room I was in.
I keep measuring. I've never been in a place that was over, I think, 2,000. I can't imagine 20,000.
Well, hey, that La Quinta School, 13 of the 50 classrooms were over 2,000. You know, I had Stetzer show me. I had Dave Stetzer as a friend. He can just turn and take the thing apart, turn a knob, and make it read up to 20,000 instead of to 2,000. And I've had him give me two of those because my work in California, I just find many, many, many places that are, you know, up over 20,000. I mean, in fact, I've got a little halogen light here I can plug in, and it makes it go over 20,000. So that's one thing you can do is you can measure it. Then Stetzer Markets capacitor filters that short out the dirty electricity and let the other stuff come through. They don't cost anything. I mean, they don't cost any increased electric bill. I don't know what he sells them for. I paid $30 for mine. It's probably more now. He hasn't made
a nickel. Definitely more.
I'm sure they're more.
I just had to buy a whole pack of them for that apartment in California.
it's every nickel spent is worth it because
it's definitely worth
school,
it.
At the school, if you worked in that school for a year, you had a 21% increase of cancer. If you worked there for a long time, it was even worse. Another scary thing is one of my former students and friends just published a study showing that he measured women during their pregnancies 15 years ago and showed that those that had higher magnetic field readings for the one day he measured them had more kids with asthma. I jumped over this, but when I was at the Vista Del Monte Elementary School, the teachers made the measurements, and I was negotiated with the school district, gave a show and tell about it, and offered my services and the equipment for free. They turned me down flat. But when I was there, one of the teachers complained that her kids were hyperactive and unteachable. I'd heard that before, so I filtered her room on a Friday night. I think I didn't put this in the book, maybe the next copy. Monday, she called me next week and said, "My God, what did you do?" I didn't tell her what I was going to do or what it was going to do. And she said, "Well, the kids were perfect angels Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday." I said, "Well, what happened Wednesday?" So, "Oh, that's the day they went to the library." So then I found a book. I found a book by John Ott. He developed the Ott Light. He did exactly the same thing in Florida in 1973. It's in his book. It's called Health and Light, and there's a video. He made movies of these kids, and affected classrooms. There, the source was the ballast from dirty fluorescent lights, and if he shorted them and grounded them, the kids were fine. So I got the before and after video. When I saw that, I wrote a paper which just got accepted. I got to stop working. I'm getting too old.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, it's look at this. It's so important. It's so interesting. But you know, if you stood back and thought about the extra deaths an extra misery that this wonderful worldwide invention, it is civilization. You can't have civilization without electricity. I don't think we should go back to fires and caves, but I think we got to develop and distribute this stuff in a safer fashion and make sure that, first of all, I'd like to clean up our schools. The schools I've been in are filthy.
Right.
Most of them. That's got to be bothering the kids, and it's making them unteachable, as I said. And there's so much to do, so little time. The other thing I come away with, and I don't know if it comes through in the book, but at every level you're facing mountainous corruption. The media is corrupt. The state government is corrupt. The universities are corrupt. The hospitals. And some of my coworkers in this field, the epidemiologists, have been bought out by cell phone money. It's kind of sad. I'm so glad.
I remember you tell the story of one expert. I forget what his name was, Sir Richard somebody.
He's
bought out.
Yeah, I grin. He was one of my heroes. He died
before
that first study.
Go ahead.
No, it's Richard Dahl. He was one of my heroes. He got knighted for his. They did the original studies that showed smoking and lung cancer, the smoking lung cancer connection. And I'd met him. I'd been to his office in London, and I could never understand why he seemed to be on the other side of some of these issues until after he died. It came out that that he was on the take from Monsanto for many, many years for big bucks, and that's, if you could buy him, you could buy anybody.
We did a wonderful interview that I encourage you to listen to. It's in the archives with a documentary filmmaker named Bertram Verhaag, and he's just made a documentary called Scientists Under Attack that's about the, extraordinary effort to manipulate and censor science, which raises questions about genetically modified food. It's really quite extraordinary.
This is a small fraternity. When I first started out, there might have been 50 epidemiologists in the whole world. Now there's a lot more of them. But I've gone to court for people, and I've stopped power lines from ripping up certain neighborhoods. And I see the same experts, full professors making a lot more dough than I ever made, testifying for the other side. And I know in their heart of hearts they know that I'm right and they're wrong, but they can get up and look in the mirror without getting sick. I just can't do it. And I name names, but I don't want to.
Well, that's why you're one of our heroes. Now, before you go, I just have to get you to tell one other extraordinary story from the book. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a book you want to get. It's very easy reading. It's very well written, very easy reading, and absolutely fascinating. And that's the story of the cows. Page 80, and it's the Dave Stetzer and the Midwestern School and what the dairy farmer noticed.
They're the ones that discovered this. They were smart enough to figure out that it wasn't the power frequency. It was this dirty stuff running through the grounds, and it was disturbing the cows. Well, the story I think you're talking about just really caught my attention, too. Dave told me that he cleaned up a school someplace in Wisconsin. He went in and spent a day, and for $3,000, he
filtered the school,
cleaned the whole place up with filters, and didn't think any more about it. He cleaned up another school that I've talked to the people there and the principal. I mean, he just turned them from a bunch of sick people and sick kids into healthy people with those filters. But this other school he did, he got a call about a 2 weeks later. This farmer called him and said, "Hey, the farmer noticed that his cows all of a sudden started giving 10 pounds more milk each a day, and hey, that's a lot of money." The dairy
farm, because the dirty electricity wasn't running through the ground they were standing on.
That's right. I mean, all of a sudden, so he finally got the Stetzer and said, "Hey, thank you. The other story I love, and this has to do with happy times like having babies. He worked with a bank where all the tellers were aboard and miscarrying and not being able to get pregnant, and he cleaned it up and forgot about it. And a year later, he gets irate call from the bank manager saying, "You SOB." He said, "All my gals have left. They're all pregnant." I got to be able to laugh at this stuff because it's, hey, you know, the first thing that happens when they electrify a third world country is the birth rate just goes south immediately. And it's not due to social things and money and women using birth control. It's due to electricity, pure and simple.
Right.
And it's true of cows, it's true of pigs, it's true of people. And so this stuff, I think that's why we have these fertility clinics all over the country. I tell the women, instead of spending money on the fertility clinics, just take the old man and go camping up in Canada for a couple of weeks.
Okay, so let's say I do all the things you've suggested in my home, and I just can't, you know, even with the Stetzer filters. Well, let me ask you the question. If you do filter the whole house, can that solve the problem, or are some bad enough that that's not going to work, you need to move out?
Okay, it'll solve the dirty electricity problem, but I've been to places where the problem is it's higher frequency stuff, like in schools. A lot of them have Wi-Fi that are making people sick, and if there's a high frequency source like a nearby radio station or a transmitter that's putting stuff out above the kilohertz range, the filters won't take care of that,
right.
And sometimes you have to get into like reflective paint or other techniques. But most of the houses I've looked at, most of the places I've looked at, let me caution people about these smart meters. So I heard that Hawaii and I think Maryland have decided not to go with them, but they're putting these things up all over California, and I've talked to countless people who've been driven out of their homes because they become instantly ill because each of the meters has got three transmitters in it and a dirty electricity source, a switch mode power supply, and it's a combination of both that are making these people sick. And like I've got to sign up my smart meter saying no smart meter. The other horrible discovery I made the other day, I was measuring a house, it doesn't have any meter on it, but they had bought new appliances, and stupid appliances have built-in transmitters to communicate with the smart meters. So these women in these kitchens are going to be getting fried by their own appliances. This insanity's got to end. I mean, there's so little time.
Well, we've had Blake Leavitt on to talk about smart meters. And, in fact, the apartment I was describing in California all had smart meters on it, and that was one of my concerns.
Well, it's a hell of a concern. Some people don't notice a thing. I mean, I don't feel much unless I bathe myself in really filthy electricity for a long time. But other people, the minute it happened, like a guy called me yesterday, he said, hey, they put a meter on my house. I haven't been able to sleep. He has to sleep out in the living room because it's on his bedroom wall, and it was getting him. So, no, and they're horrible. I mean, they just don't do anything for us, and why should we have to pay for them?
Right. Well, it's a surveillance device as well. So
they're easily hacked.
Right.
They could put it down. They could shut your power off at a button instead of coming out and disconnecting you. And no, it's all to their advantage, and it's all a matter of money. It's all exercise of greed. And I don't know how we're going to whip it because they control the media, and they control Congress, and they control the state government.
Well, one of the things I try and communicate both to my clients and to my subscribers is, the economics of getting off the grid. A lot of you first pencil it out, and it doesn't look economic. Once you start to get into the risk issues, getting off the grid and doing it in a way which protects you from dirty electricity is worth sitting down and figuring out if you can do.
It sure is, but you got to watch out for the. I've talked to some people who got into solar, and the solar inverters were making dirt. But there are a couple that now that are on the market that are give you clean electricity, unless you're running off DC. But everybody wants to run their AC appliances, and you have to change the DC to AC to do that. Just got to be careful. But there are some now on the market that are good.
Our time is up, so I want you to just take a second briefly and explain how we can stay up on your work. If you could just describe your website and how we stay current.
Okay, I've got a website. It's www.sammilham.com, and I've got two new papers to add to it, and a couple that just got rejected by the Lancet. I put them there now, and I got two more accepted in this last couple of days about cell phone towers and another one about attention deficit disorder in kids. I think that's a really important one. You know, 8% of the kids in this country take Ritalin for a disease that's probably all caused by electricity. That makes me want to barf. Well, just thank you so much for having me.
I can't thank you enough. You are one of our heroes, and I think your book is wonderful. Again, everyone, Dirty Electricity, Electrification, and the Diseases of Civilization. I can't recommend it to you enough. Okay, Dr. Milam, have a wonderful evening, and we're in cahoots.
Okay, so thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, remember the new private blog next week, and look for an update on that. Our forward calendar, we have the Precious Metals Market Report next week. As always, lots to talk about. I'm going to be on vacation in Nantucket, so you're going to hear a relaxed Catherine Austin Fitz. But I'll be talking with Franklin by phone. He'll be in Tennessee. I'll be in Nantucket. And then the following week, wonderful, wonderful Salary Report, Peter Ireland, Startup Financing for the Rest of Us. Peter is the author of the best book I know on how to finance a new small business. It's called The Smart Startup Guide. You can get it at his website at antiventurecapital.com. Wonderful, wonderful entrepreneur. I'm also going to talk a little bit about the capital structure I did for a new company in Tennessee, and make sure you get a copy of the document. So that's going to be a very interesting Salary Report. And then the first week of October, of course, our third quarter wrap-up. And as I mentioned before, Adam Tromley is going to be back on November 17th to talk about free energy. And next week we're going to have transcripts up for his last interview on entrainment technology and subliminal programming. Again, incredible feedback. So if you haven't listened to that, I really recommend you go into the archives and listen to it. I think it'll be very, very useful to you. And the transcript, of course, please feel free to share with family and friends. And so lots cooking, a big special Salary Report coming later this month, pointing the way to real solutions coming out of the student loan debacle. So with that, please remember, until we meet again, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.